This is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. Every 2 seconds, someone in the United States needs blood. 9.2 million people donate blood every year, but that's just 10% of the 38% eligible to do so. We're going to talk today about blood, then later in the hour, checking out your ancestors. Help from the Cincinnati Public Library to trace your roots. But first, joining me to talk about blood, the Hawksworth Blood Center University of Cincinnati Director, Dr. Ronald Sacker, and Hawksworth Blood Center Community Relations Manager, Alicia Lipton. You can join the conversation by calling us. Our number is 513-419-7100 or email us at talk@wvxu.org. You also can find us on Facebook and Twitter. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Dr. Sacker, we'll start with you. Tell us briefly, for people that only know Hawksworth and maybe its symbol, what the Blood Center really is and does.
Well, the Hawksworth Blood Center, part of the University of Cincinnati Academic Health Center, is really the stewards of the blood supply for the community. It's our privilege to actually maintain the blood supply for our community. And to this end, we obviously try and encourage people to donate blood. We then store it, test it, and distribute it to the 30 hospitals in the community that need it and require it for all sorts of different things. But in addition to doing that, Hawksworth is an academic program. We are actually doing research in blood. We have a research program that looks at things, aspects of leukemia. We're looking at stem cells and stem cell mobilization. A new field called regenerative medicine, whereby we can actually create tissues. I don't think we're anywhere close to the idea of synthesizing organs, but certainly tissues can be done. And we also have a little program jokingly CSI Hawksworth. We do testing for all the organ transplantation in the community. So there are a number of things that we do.
So it's more than just having people donate blood and keeping track of it.
That is true, but of course, that's the main reason that we exist. We are privileged to be, as I say, the stewards of the blood supply for the community.
Alicia, the organization celebrating 75 years now. Tell us a little bit about how it started.
Well, Hawksworth Blood Center was started 75 years ago by Dr. Paul Hawksworth, who was a very young surgeon, and he realized that the community really needed to have its own blood bank, blood ready, when the patients needed it. You really, in an emergency situation, can't wait around for people to come in and donate after the accident occurs. So he had the foresight to set that up. We're actually the second oldest blood bank in the nation. Cook County Hospital beat us by just 1 week. And it started with a staff of three. We have grown to a staff of just over 300 in 75 years.
So it started out obviously small, and it continued operation through all that time. There was never a time period when it stopped. It just kept growing as you went.
Right. It just kept growing. It was originally started at General Hospital, which was University Hospital, many, many years ago. The name has changed. And then I believe Dr. Sacker was in the 1980s that they actually renamed it to Hawksworth Blood Center.
Yes.
To honor Dr. Hawksworth.
Let's talk about the whole process of donating blood. That is your main purpose and service there, is providing and keeping the blood supply. And I think there are, of course, lots of people who do not donate blood, but there are many who maybe either haven't considered it or don't understand how it works. What do you need to know or do to donate blood?
Well, let me preface my answer by saying that actually 38% of the population in the United States are actually eligible to donate. Only 5% do. So the individuals that actually provide blood for the various communities are very dedicated people. And of course, to donate blood, you generally go and get screened. And so there's a health questionnaire that is undertaken. There's some basic tests, including also checking blood pressure and pulse, etc. And then once an individual, and questions that are filled out, once an individual qualifies, they can then donate the blood. And it can be donated through either a simple donation, or there's automated donation that we do now with the really variety of instruments that can collect blood and components of the blood.
Automated? Is that what you said?
Automated, yes.
Automated. So you still have to go in person.
Of course. Yeah. No, we don't have robots there.
You can just phone it in. I didn't think that would work out.
We're looking at that.
Well, there you go. So you mentioned that you have 38% of the population that's eligible to donate blood. What that means 62% aren't. What do you have to be? What does your lifestyle have to be like in order to be a person who can donate?
Well, essentially, one has to be relatively healthy. Obviously, there are also individuals who have chronic ailments and that don't necessarily disqualify people from donating. But various infectious diseases that individuals have acquired over the years might disqualify them. For example, travel to a malaria area, taking drugs that prevent malaria, individuals who've had hepatitis, things that potentially could be transmitted by blood. And there are a variety of other different infectious diseases, including HIV, that could be transmitted by blood. So we screen tremendously, to prevent these things. So the blood supply currently is the safest that it's ever been. It's never been safer.
Now, you have to be a certain age to donate, correct?
Correct.
And that is how old?
17, unless you're 16, and then you can do it with a signed parental consent.
So as soon as 16, you can donate. Is there a maximum age?
No.
So you could be 97, and if you're healthy enough, you can still donate blood.
Theoretically, yes. In fact, we have some relatively elderly people who've donated, almost 50 gallons.
I have a friend who years ago used to always donate blood and said she did it because she thought it was good to sort of clean out her own blood supply. Is that true? Is there any benefit to the donor in that way?
Well, being a hematologist, of course, let me answer that. The blood supply is safe, but it's also you're giving to your community, but you're also giving to yourself. And blood flows better. In fact, potentially, giving a unit of blood decreases the amount of iron that can accumulate in some people. And there are disorders where iron does accumulate. And iron is an oxidation substance. So, people take vitamin E to protect their blood vessels as an antioxidant. I think we all hear about that. Donating blood is a wonderful antioxidant. And, of course, there's a health screening check that is done to the donors before they come in. So there are many health benefits to donating.
We're talking with folks from the Hawksworth Blood Center today. If you have a question or a comment, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number is 513-419-7100. You can email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. So you find out that you're eligible to donate. Then what's the next step?
Well, when an individual comes in to make that donation, they can call us on the phone. They can also schedule it over the internet, which is time-saving. It's great and easy. But when they come in, the first thing, as Dr. Sacker was talking about, they're going to go through a questionnaire, answer several questions about travel, medications, their personal history, and then they're going to have a mini physical. We're going to check blood pressure, their weight in some cases, sometimes, especially with our high schoolers, we'll get somebody who's a very small-framed young lady, and we want to make sure that she weighs enough to donate blood. You need to weigh 110 pounds. We're going to check your temperature to make sure that, you don't have a virus going on right now that's going to cause a fever. And then you actually go to the donor bed. If it's a red cell donation, the maximum time that you'll be in the chair donating blood is 15 minutes. So that process goes very, very quickly. If you're doing an automated donation, which that would be a platelet or a double red cell, that can take longer. It can take 60 to 90 minutes of your time, but you're saving twice as many lives. So it's well worth taking that extra time.
Well, let's talk about that. What is involved in a platelet donation? How is that different? What do you do with platelets that is different from what you might do with whole blood?
Well, in actual fact, if an individual goes and donates a regular donation, in other words, the red cells and the fluid can be removed and the platelets can be concentrated, and then we can pool that. That is part of the routine blood donation. Then, as Alicia indicated, there's an automated donation where actually the donor has a needle inserted in the arm. It connects to a machine which separates the blood into the different components and returns everything minus the platelets or whatever we want to remove. So that requires a little bit longer time. Whilst this machine essentially is a sophisticated centrifuge or spinning machine, and it separates the blood components. So we collect platelets that way.
Now, blood you can donate how often?
Every 56 days.
And what about platelets? Is there a time limit on that?
Actually, generally speaking, one can donate a platelet unit every week.
Really? So that would be something if you wanted to do, you could do more often. Sometimes people, I've heard say that they're going to go have surgery and they want somebody to go give blood from their family and bank blood for them. Do you do that? Do you allow that? Is that how that works or is that complicated?
Well, we advise against that because, number one, the volunteer blood supply, the person who volunteers to donate a unit of blood tends to be safer than someone who is actually asked to donate. So, and that's been shown over the years because infectious disease markers have been studied in what we call directed donations or family donations versus the volunteer blood donation. The volunteer is generally a pedigreed donor. In other words, they more often than not donate frequently because, as I indicated, 5% of the population donate, whereas 38% can. And it's usually this 5% who are altruistic, they're dedicated, they want to come and help their community. So for a variety of reasons, including those safer donors, if you will, that's one of the reasons we discourage directed donations.
Our phone number, if you have a question or a comment, is 513-419-7100. We go now to Jenny in Withamsville. Hi, Jenny. What's your question?
Hi. I'm a 17-year leukemia survivor, actually, and I started donating blood when I was 16, and I was diagnosed at 19. I have very much missed the ability to donate blood because of my cancer diagnosis, and I've always been curious as to whether it's possible for me to donate blood for any cause whatsoever. I'm interested in the health benefits and also if there's any sort of research purposes for blood like mine.
Let me answer that, Jenny. Thank you for calling. And absolutely, that's fantastic that you're doing so well. Of course, blood transfusions certainly sustain the ability to get chemotherapy. But in reality, you would be disqualified as a donor. But that doesn't mean to say that you can't contribute. You can certainly contribute potentially to research. There's always research going on. But also, you can be an advocate for blood donation. And I think in many ways, that can make you even more valuable because you can go out, you can actually spread the word in terms of how it's helped you and the fact that you were a blood donor before because you wanted to contribute to your community and, you know, notwithstanding the health benefits, but because, unfortunately, you had a serious illness. And the serious illness, in fact, was supported by the fact that you got blood donations from volunteers. So I think you could really be a great asset to us.
Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Thank you, Jenny.
Yes, it does.
All right. Our number again, 513-419-7100. Remember, you also can email your questions, talk@wvxu.org, or post them on Facebook or Twitter. Frank wants to know if anyone has ever proposed being able to take a tax write-off for donating blood, as you do when you donate money to other organizations.
Actually, I can comment on that. I mean, there's a lot of debate about that because the concern is, using that statistic that we mentioned before, 38% eligible, only 5% do. And, you know, you have instances such as the weather-related challenges we've had, you know, this season. It's been pretty bad, of course. And that has limited the blood supply because people don't want to go out in the cold. And for that matter, it's dangerous traveling. And a lot of our school drives where, you know, the students have missed school and sometimes they contribute to blood drives. So it really has been very, very challenging to keep the supply for the community, not only our community, but other communities as well. In actual fact, in our community over last year, we had to import about 7,000 units. So our community is not self-sustaining. Now, of course, the discussion has been, well, if you made it a tax write-off, surely more people are likely to donate. Well, two things about that. Number one, of course, we appeal to the altruism of individuals. You know, we want you to voluntarily donate, although we do give cookies and, you know, juice, etc. Significant benefit. And sometimes, sometimes T-shirts and things. But that issue, because the blood supply has been very fragile, that's been discussed at national circles, but at the moment it's not being authorized, and you know the FDA has not supported that.
Ricardo has a question from Covington. He says originally he's from South America and he can't donate because he had some infectious diseases as a child, and he wants to know if there is ever a time limit when he would be able to donate again, depending on the disease.
Well, Ricardo, thank you for bringing that question up. I mean, there are certainly infectious diseases in South America that are more prevalent, one of which is called Chagas disease. And this is in fact, that is an exclusion. Potentially, as testing is evolved and more testing is refined, there may be a possibility for that. But at the moment now, that would be an exclusion.
What about the most, I always hear type O is really important, and does it matter what type of blood you have if you donate? I mean, obviously you need all kinds, but why is type O so good?
Marianne, your point is well taken. In fact, it does matter that we need all types. Of course, type O is the universal donor. So potentially it could be used for anybody. And we use it, we call it trauma blood if there's a major injury and we don't have time to determine the group of the individual, or for that matter, to cross-match the blood and do some matching, then type O is O negative, is usually used for trauma blood. But the bottom line is we need blood from everybody.
So no matter who it is, you certainly can use it. If you're type O, maybe give it even a second thought because you can be even more helpful, I suppose.
Absolutely. And, of course, I know a number of our type O donors probably get a lot of calls saying, please come in and donate because, you know, certainly type O blood is used quite frequently and, as I've pointed out, in injury and trauma, et cetera.
Gary's calling from Covington. Hi, Gary. What's your question?
Good afternoon. I have been disqualified in terms of blood donations. I do understand at the beginning of the HIV epidemic, little was known, and I'm still in a computer base reflecting that. However, my HIV status is negative, and I have no other diseases, with the exception of borderline diabetes. I'm continually disqualified.
Well, I think in terms of answering that question, one would have to see why, in fact, initially were you disqualified? Was there ever? Because you're certainly in the early stages, there were some false positive tests. If you are constantly negative, then that, of course, wouldn't disqualify you. But the key question is, what was the reason that you were disqualified in the first place? And, you know, perhaps certain, you know, we can look at the reason for that, and there may well be issues that have been resolved now that may qualify you, but I think I need a little bit more information in terms of what was the reason.
Gary, do you want to answer? Do you want?
Yes,
go ahead.
Yes. Initially, my disqualification was with regard to high-risk populations in terms of sexual activity, and that was my disqualification. And
so, if he wanted to have this, could he come and have to talk to somebody about evaluating him again and maybe get his name off the list that we can't donate?
Well, there is a question. Actually, Alicia, I've been talking a lot. Alicia, why don't you answer some of these now?
Okay. When you come in and fill out the questionnaire form, there is a question about sexual background and practices, as Gary mentioned. Unfortunately, the rules are not ours to make as far as saying whether or not somebody could donate blood. It's an FDA regulation. Recently, Canada has changed their regulations and made it just a one-year deferral. We, Hawksworth, along with several other blood centers, have championed this cause and would like to see changes made in the United States. And that's something that's taken to the FDA usually on about an annual basis. But as of yet, we really haven't gotten any news back that they're willing to make that change. It is a permanent deferral at this point.
Thanks for calling, Gary. We appreciate it. We go now to Joe in Montgomery. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you?
Just fine. What's your question?
I don't have a question, more of a comment. I've been donating blood regularly, like two or three times a year for many, many, many years, and I wanted to point out that sometimes, even though people are healthy, like myself, this determines that even though my blood was safe and it got donated, that I got a letter from Hawksworth after I donated that my ferritin level was low. I didn't even know what ferritin was, and so I went to a doctor, and they said my iron was low, and then I went in for tests, and it turns out it takes longer than 56 days for my body to replace what they take out when they donate. So I've been told that I can still donate, but I should be longer than 56 days because of this issue that my body. And so I just wanted to point out that sometimes health issues that are there are brought out by donating.
Actually, Joe, thank you. I'd like to comment on that. I think you bring up a very important point. And we've been using, this is a relatively new introduction, this ferritin. Ferritin is a small molecule that reflects the status of the iron stores. And I was part of a National Institutes of Health study that we were looking at methods to enhance safety, not only for the recipients of blood, but also for the volunteers who donate blood. And one of the concerns was, you know, if the ferritin, if one donates frequently and your ferritin levels go down, this could potentially cause some problems. In fact, it's been associated with some unusual things like restless leg syndrome. you know, people who go to sleep at night and their legs start moving around. And that seems to be related to a low ferritin level. But it's just a modality that in order to protect the donor. And perhaps, you know, when the only way that actually iron is removed from the body, essentially, is by bleeding. People who are iron deficient are people who, in fact, mostly have blood loss rather than just not taking iron in the diet. So removing blood frequently can make you iron deficient, and there could be other potential consequences of that. So this is a long-winded answer to your comment about improving the safety of the donation process for the donor.
Joe, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. We go now to Dale in Pleasant Ridge. Hi, Dale.
Hey, Captain, how are we doing today?
Just fine. What's your question?
Well, I just have a comment. I have been a super donor at Hawksworth for many years. I'm getting, I think, close to 20 gallons of blood, and I really enjoy going. You get a relationship with the people. They get to know you, and you cut off who you are and who your family is and things. I've also had multiple hip replacements and now a knee replacement. Did an autologous donation, so they use my own blood, which I've done multiple times. And what I can say is just encourage people to do it. It's a good thing. You feel good when you do it, and it doesn't take that long. And there's some nice people there, and you're doing good for the community.
Dale, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it. We go now to John in Fairfield. Hi, John. What did you want to add?
Well, one of your experts kind of commented about the fact that you guys tend to, Hawksworth tends to discourage designated blood drives for people because they don't always get the right quality of people in. Historically, I've been one of those people, if you put me close to a needle, I would pass out. But about 4 or 5 years ago, a friend of mine had some serious medical issues and a blood drive was being run. And I thought, well, for this good friend, I will go ahead and I'll make the attempt. And ever since then, I have been a donator. Every 16 weeks, I give double blood red cells. And this whole thing with this designated blood drive was actually what got me into it and got me over the hump with my fear of needles.
Well, we appreciate that. And actually, I thank you so much. And let me qualify, when I was referring to the designated blood donation, it's designated for that individual. But obviously, we encourage blood drives for persons who donate in lieu of that of a person who is ill. So a blood drive is arranged, and people such as yourself might go and donate to the community, not necessarily going to that individual. So it's really to the whole blood supply, and of course, people such as yourself are very valued. And thank you so much for participating, and thank you for your ongoing contributions.
John, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. We go now to Mickey in Walnut Hills. Hi, Mickey.
Hi. Thank you both for your work. I have a question about the quality of the blood itself. So many people in America take antipsychotics, antidepressants, antibiotics, blood pressure medication, etc. Does that affect the person receiving the blood? Should that be a factor? I know you can't test for everything in the
blood.
Alicia,
do you want to answer that one?
I sure will. And thank you for calling in and asking this question. It's a question that a lot of people have. And the good thing is when you come in and we're filling out your paperwork, we ask what medications you're taking. If you're taking antibiotics, you cannot donate during that antibiotic period. Certain blood pressure medications, clotting medications, we would not let you donate. If somebody's taking an antidepressant, that's okay. It's not going to affect the individual who gets the blood. So the blood itself is, as doctor said, the safest that it's ever been. It's very safe to receive blood if you're in the hospital. It's not a fear that you should have.
Mickey, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. We go now to Michael. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Yeah, my wife.
Okay, I'm sorry, Michael. You're breaking up. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm calling on behalf of my wife. She's a cancer survivor. She's been 3 years clean, I guess.
But no transfusion.
But she did. She did not have a transfusion. I just want to get this right. She did not have a transfusion during her cancer surgery. Just wondering if she'd still be eligible to donate.
All right, Michael, I'm going to have you listen off the air because you're breaking up there. But his wife had lung cancer surgery. He wants to know if she's still eligible to donate. She did not have a transfusion.
No, that sort of cancer would be disqualified, unfortunately. Of course, you know, the part of the problem is many of these cancers, we don't know what causes them. Is it a genetic abnormality? Is it some sort of environmental agent? And clearly we have to protect the recipient. So with the understanding that we don't know all the issues relating to cancer causation, we really have to protect the blood supply. So she would be disqualified.
Eileen wants to know if there's a time limit for someone who lived in the UK during Mad Cow, the outbreak in the 90s, if that person can donate.
Well, there was a time limit. In fact, it's changed quite dramatically. In fact, Alicia, do you remember the dates? I can't even remember.
Oh, I don't remember the dates. I know that it's like 82 through sometime in the 90s.
It was in the mid-90s, if I'm not mistaken. Of course, that's when they started, you know, screening or excluding individuals who, in fact, lived, because that was the sort of peak of the mad cow, call it, if you will, an epidemic. It really wasn't an epidemic. It was just that there was increased awareness and there were cases being identified. But and there were a number of other countries, but in the United Kingdom, during that period, individuals who stayed there were excluded. And that's also partly because we do not have a test for the organism that's associated with it called a prion.
We go now to Mohammed, who is downtown. Hi, Mohammed. What's your question?
Hi. I saw an advertisement once before stating that blood from minorities is needed. Could the guest please elaborate on that?
Absolutely. I'll start, and I'm sure Alicia has been more involved with some of the recruitment efforts. But clearly, the majority of donations that we get are from Caucasians, in fact, by far. So we're trying to encourage, since, you know, we have a diverse ethnic population in our community, we want to have representation from everybody, and it's to encourage everybody to donate. For example, we have a sickle cell program with African Americans. Now, of course, if they get frequent blood donation, they received a lot of blood from individuals of Caucasian background, they may become sensitized to that and develop antibodies, in other words, reactions to it. So we want to try and refine our donor population to be representative. So sometimes we need to match more precisely.
And along on those lines, we have specialized drives. We have an annual Martin Luther King Jr. drive that we do on his birthday. In June, we also have a Dr. Charles Drew drive. And Dr. Charles Drew was a wonderful African-American hematologist, and we pay homage to him. So that's to get the African-American donors in. Our younger donors, we see, are a very diverse population. When we're on the university campus, that's where diversity is at. We just need, for the YP, Generation Y, Generation X, for all minorities to come in and make that blood donation.
Mohammed, thanks so much for your call. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. We're just about out of time as we wrap up. Somebody that's interested in donating, how can they go about doing it? Who do they contact? What do they do?
They can give us a call at 513-451-0910, or they can visit us online. It's a very easy process to schedule.
And we have all of links to all of that on our website, wvxu.org. Any final encouraging words, Dr. Sacker?
Again, as I think I mentioned, give to your community and give to yourself. There are not only value to giving to your community, because we are responsible for maintaining the blood supply for our community at times of need. But you also, there are the health benefits. And of course, there's nothing better than looking in the mirror and saying, I've really been able to help somebody. In fact, with our blood component separations, we've been able to help 3 people at 1 donation.
Well, thank you so much for being here. We've been talking about the Hawksworth Blood Center and the blood needs in Greater Cincinnati. My guests today were Hawksworth Blood Center, University of Cincinnati Director Dr. Ronald Sacker, and Hawksworth Blood Center Community Relations Manager Alicia Lipton. In a moment, we'll talk about tracing your genealogy. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik.